Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, SV Pod. Scott Van Pelt, along with Stanford Steve, bring you high-level sports analysis as well as stories as two dads raising their kids. Plus, find out every Tuesday what they hate to see if you agree. That's SV Pod. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, offers exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinne Ogumike, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today, on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. And also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, I'm going to tell you one place I've crossed off my vacation list. Also, your stories about why you quit football. But first... All right, so many of you know I lived in Durham, North Carolina for 10 years. I went to the University of North Carolina for graduate school for a couple years, and then I stuck around for another 8. It is, like, for me, the place I've lived as an adult that feels most like home. Like, it's where I wouldn't say I started my career, because that's not fair, but it is where I started my broadcasting career, first place I did radio, all of that stuff, you know? Now, if you know me, I'm not one of them people that does a lot of, like, missing stuff. I don't say this with any measure of pride. I'm just telling you kind of how I'm wired, right? Like, people are like, oh, I miss you. And I'm like, look, I don't know what to tell you. That's just not really the emotional space that I traffic in. It doesn't really matter. It's not that I don't feel it about you. You know what I mean? I just recognize things come and go. It's just kind of how I am. Makes me a very difficult person to date. But hey, this is just what it is. Anyway, I have not missed Durham. And I left Durham 9 years ago. I left May 11th, 2013 is the day that I left. I have not missed Durham more than I miss Durham on Saturday night. Coach K's last game at Cameron Indoor Stadium. Now, I got to be honest with you. I only missed it then because Duke got embarrassed. Like, if Duke had won and stomped him out, I wouldn't have missed it at all. It wouldn't have been any fun to be there. But under the circumstances that we had, it was amazing. I didn't even watch the game. I was on the Amtrak coming back from Boston because I wasn't staying in that a moment longer than I was required to. I'm riding the train. I'm just checking the app, and I'm getting the text. And I'm like, wait a minute. Carolina gonna win this? Are you serious? Carolina's gonna win this? And man, like, just for, like, nostalgic purposes, I'm going to just lay it out for you as the part of why I missed it so much, right? So, like, my man Aiden, one of my very good friends, we had, like, ritual for the Wednesday game more than the Saturday game. Saturday game is a little different, but we basically had a ritual, man. We went to our spot for lunch on Wednesdays, Bond's Cuisine on 9th Street. Holla at my man Chan if you over there, man. Love that dude. Like, family, you know what I'm saying? We do that. We'd figure out whose house everybody was going to link up at. Everybody wind up there. Like, we got all our stories and all our times and everything else. And, like, you get in it. And I ain't from North Carolina. I'm from Texas. I didn't get there as, like, a huge Carolina fan. I just hated Duke. But you wind up and you get there, man, and it's hard not to be part of that rivalry in one form or fashion if you're somewhere between Chapel Hill and Durham. You can kind of ignore it if you're in Raleigh because, you know, NC State, like, what they got to be concerned about with this, to be perfectly honest. Not even throwing shade at you, at least not right now. But are you on that 15501 corridor, right? Like, hey, man, this is the thing. The whole world shuts down, and it's one of those things that's hard to explain. How everything about, like, that rivalry never stops at any given point in time. You could be somewhere and somebody in line at the grocery store could be like, hey, Duke lost in the finals of the national chess championships. You'll get, like, a standing ovation. Like, it's not like that Auburn-Alabama situation where somebody might get shot over this. It's just an unrelenting state of pettiness between Carolina and Duke. It never ends. And I personally cannot imagine anything feeling better if you are a fan of North Carolina basketball than sending Coach K out with an L in his last game at Cameron Indoor Stadium. 100 former players showed up. You can't fit no 100 extra people in Cameron without the fire marshal getting involved. Yeah, man, that place only like 75 people. All them dudes came back. And you know they didn't all want to come back, but they did. It's a chance to see the homies from way back you ain't seen in a while, you know, something like that, whatever. So they all there, all these people paying all this money to sit in a seat with your knees all the way in your chest. I can't imagine how it felt for Adam Silver. He a Duke alum, and he all tall. He's sitting there all scrunched up just to watch your squad catch an embarrassing, indefensible L in front of everybody. They were 11-point favorites. Got mowed down. They were so salty after the game. Chris Carwell ain't shake Hubert Davis's hand. Nolan Smith looked the other way. John Shire looking like the only one that got any home training. Coach K rolled up after the game because they had the post-game celebration planned. Terrible idea, guys. You should have done that at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon if you were going to do it, because there was always a chance that you was going to catch that L, and you caught that big old L. And so they sitting there, and they got the post-game celebration coming, and them poor players, they over there funky. They still ain't took no shower. You know how bad they just want to take a shower and go home? They got to sit there, and Coach K gets on the microphone, and the first thing he says is that this was unacceptable. Damn, dog! Why you got to do us like that in front of everybody? Everybody was trying to act like that shit didn't even happen. And there you got Coach K, old sore, losing behind. This was unacceptable, but the season was acceptable. That's the best you got for a team that I want to say lost 5 games all year long? The best you got for them is that was acceptable? Dog, why you got to be like that? The fact that you like that is why it was so glorious for everybody else. It was amazing for everybody else. I can't think of anything better than them catching that L. And I feel bad for like all the people in media, people who work at ESPN and other places. And the reason I feel bad for them is, reasonably, nobody presumed that North Carolina had any chance in this. I want to say they got beat by a Dubsky when they played this game at the Smith Center. You wouldn't think that they were going to win. But the only angle anybody in media was prepared for to talk about this game was just the grand coronation of Mike Krzyzewski. The next thing you knew, they had to talk about a weird L. The weirdest L. I talked to all my homies and people I knew in the business that were in the building, and they were just like, yo, it was a really tense and weird and awkward scene. But you want to know what made it the most awkward and what made it the most weird. And again, I check this all out after the fact. But this is the thing about Duke that is different than other. Well, there are many things. I'm just going to point to this one. And what makes them different is the crazies. Right? I honestly don't believe that any basketball program does more to give back to its own student body than Duke. And you know why I think that about Duke? Because only Duke provides an opportunity for, I don't even know the number, however many people can fit in a student seating, ready-made identity. Everybody in college is trying to show up and figure out who they are. And if you get to the answer for who you are and that thing is ultimately not very interesting, you can just be a dork at the basketball games. Like, all of a sudden, you get to be somebody. At one point, the Cameron Crazies were kind of like built into, you know, being a student section and talking about basketball. Then you look up one day and somebody's like dressed like Ronald McDonald or something like that. You know what I mean? It's just like, hey, I don't know who I am, or I don't like what this is. I'm just a herb deep down. And cool. So all the herbs get to go there together and just be a massive collection of herbs, and they give them a name. It's kind of like joining a gang. It really is. You need that sense of community. You need to feel like somebody loves you, even though you know they don't. You know what I'm saying? You go join the mob, the crazy mob. And the thing about the crazy mob is they be crying. They be crying. Gabe, did you see all them clips of the crazies crying while the L was going down?
Sad to see.
Sad for them. It's joyous for me. Nothing brings me greater pleasure than watching the crazies cry. It is amazing. Like, why are y'all the fan base that stays crying? This doesn't happen with everybody else. It doesn't. There'll be some people crying at places. I'm not pretending that nobody's ever cried after a game, but y'all be crying all heavy, like for real with it. Because I understand, again, if you have decided that this is the person that you actually are, then it's going to hurt when Coach K loses the game on the way out. And one of my favorite things about North Carolina fans versus everybody else is Duke fans going to hit you in response to something like this and be like, oh, so what are you trying to say? Like, what does it say about you that you're happier to see us lose than you are that you win? And the answer is, it says y'all some herbs. That's what it says. Yes. Carolina fans are definitely happier. I was talking to somebody on Twitter about this, and they were like, this has got to be the biggest win in Carolina history that wasn't for a championship. And I'm like, look, you can say that the championship wins were bigger, but you can't say any of them felt better than that. It's impossible. Like, if you're really about that rivalry life, there is nothing better than sending Coach K out of there on an L. Like, one of my favorite rivalry moments ever. I don't know how many of y'all know this story. But in 2004, Florida decided in the middle of the season that they were going to fire Ron Zook. But for whatever reason, Zook worked it out for the rest of the year. So they closed out that season, at least that regular season, at Florida State. And Florida State had made the decision that they were going to dedicate the field to Bobby Bowden. So it's Doak Campbell Stadium, and they made it Bobby Bowden Field, right? Same thing they did at Cameron, right? Cameron Indoor Stadium is Coach K Court. You know, that's what you do when the building's already got a name and you don't want to offend nobody. So Florida won this game. It was not a good Florida team, just to be clear. Florida won this game on the night they dedicated Bobby Bowden Field. And so Florida fans refer to it as Ron Zook Field. That's Hubert Davis' game. Dog, if I'm Hubert Davis, I'd quit my job right then and there. It ain't never going to get better than this. I'm retiring right now as the coach at North Carolina, right? And the other thing I love about that rivalry is even people that you don't think care about that stuff, you see the salt come out of them. If you had seen Hubert Davis's face when Carawell didn't shake his hand, you saw it come out of Hubert. Hubert was like, whoa, wait a minute. Oh, this what we doing? This what we doing? The beef is real in a healthy way. It's real. But I want to ask you guys, Duke fans, because I'm not doing the Coach K send-off yet because they're going to go out in the tournament. I mean, or maybe they win the tournament. Who knows? I got a lot to say about Coach K that's actually very serious. And so we'll deal with that in a more appropriate time or whatever it is, you know, as it goes down there. But like, as a Duke fan, are you not ashamed of your assistant coaches not shaking hands in a moment like this? Do you not like feel as though when your coach behaves like a sore loser that he is not inappropriately representing your program? Y'all don't feel like that? Or y'all just a cult? You dig? Like, you ain't got no honesty about what that situation was. You ain't got no truth to yourself about how it was when it went down. Y'all don't feel like a bunch of busters after being embarrassed at your own crib on the biggest night in the history of the program. You don't feel embarrassed that they couldn't take that like some G's? You don't feel embarrassed? I mean, you don't feel embarrassed you couldn't take this like a G. You were Herb. You root for Duke. I would be ashamed. Not of the basketball team. They trying the hardest they can. How can you not be ashamed of these pillars of your community out here acting like suckers? You know how mad those people were that paid all that money to sit up in the upper deck at Cameron and be all terribly uncomfortable just to catch that L? They gave up 55 points in the second half. I don't know when the last time is that they gave up 55 points in the second half to Carolina, but I'm pretty sure it was 2009 because I was at that game. The air conditioner may or may not have been turned off. All I'm saying is it was a lot hotter in there that night than it was when I went for a Georgetown game a couple years before, the Davidson game that year. Anyway, they gave up 55 points in the second half to North Carolina. That team won a national championship. This North Carolina team going to barely make the tournament. And you gave up 55 points in the second half to them on the night that your Lord and Master was supposed to be getting honored. I would be ashamed, personally. I would feel great sadness. I wouldn't want to talk about this if I were you. I don't blame you for not wanting to talk about this. That's why I spent so much time talking about how y'all were some herbs. Because I knew y'all didn't want to talk about the game. So you would rather talk about something more pleasant that you had four more time to come to terms with, just being a herb, instead of being a loser on the night that was supposed to celebrate what winners you've been for 40 years. Nope. Just a bunch of herbs.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So Brittany Griner had been in a Russian jail for 3 weeks over some vape oil? Yeah. I don't know if you guys saw this. I looked up over the weekend, and this was reported by Russian state media. Interesting point here. That Brittany Griner got popped at the airport in Moscow. They went through a bag. They found like some vape cartridges with some hash oil in it. And 3 weeks. She'd been in the Bing 3 weeks. And we only know because Putin told us that she'd been in jail for 3 weeks. Now, this also is to say that she's been in jail. She was in jail before the whole thing popped off in Ukraine. Now, a lot of people have understandably done some two and two together on this and trying to figure out, you know, like, is, you know, how this ties into the larger strategy of Putin and everything that, you know, that goes out with this war thing and everything else. I don't know if that's the case. Like, I haven't read thoroughly enough to know if that's really safely the two and two. The reason that I found it strange that Putin would do this is because so much of what he does as the president of Russia is dependent upon the support of the really rich people, right? What's the term they like to use? The oligarchs is what they like to call them over there in Russia. It's funny how they only oligarchs in other countries. Apparently, America ain't got no oligarchs, even though just about every industry in this country has become an oligopoly. But that's neither here nor there. And if you don't know what an oligopoly is a market where basically it's five companies that run that market. Or like some small number of companies, not a monopoly, but it almost exists as a monopoly because such a small number of people have control over the market. So that's what you got there, which is America, if you listen to it, if you haven't heard. But anyway, I would not think that Putin would want to hassle a basketball player on a team owned by one of these dudes that's worth zillions and zillions of dollars. Like, that would be my thought, that he would not want to do that, because it's all fun and games for Putin and all this stuff he does until he loses the support of the rich people. And what's happening to the rich people right now in the face of this stuff with Ukraine is they're sanctioning them, right? They out there jacking up their boats. All these places that don't want to talk about how funded they are by Russian money laundering and all of that stuff. Now these assets are getting frozen. Probably seen this about how, like, what the highest ranked things are on Facebook, like the most boosted or most liked or most read articles on Facebook have changed drastically. Now that the Russians can't get to their foreign cash reserves, it's almost like all this anger that you see on the internet is manufactured. And that's why I don't be out there on there no more. You know what I mean? Like, all this stuff that's going down. But I would think that Putin would be like, yo, nah, just let this ride. Because these are the cats that I need to have my back. So I personally have a measure of confusion as to why it is they jacked Brittany Griner up. But she been in there for 3 weeks. And I legitimately want to know how we did not find out until Putin told us. Like, not one person was like, damn, y'all seen Brittany? Anybody seen Brittany? All right, so Angela McCautry said that she had been... Brittany had been locked up for 3 weeks. And I'm like, why didn't you tell us before? I mean, maybe we just need to keep it low for her or whatever it was. But I'm shocked that somebody as famous as Brittany Griner could wind up in jail for 3 weeks. For this? Hey, man. Not that I ever was really excited about the idea of like going to visit Russia, but y'all off the list. hey, man, y'all clearly focused on the wrong stuff over there. Any of these countries where I find out that y'all focus on the wrong stuff, I ain't going. Y'all out here talking about I'm going to Dubai. Dubai focus on all the wrong stuff, man. They had you busting rocks over the weed. No, I ain't going there. What you call it? People, y'all be talking about y'all go to Bali. Bali is in Indonesia. Hell no, they be wilding out over there about that stuff. The Philippines, where they was out there, like, you know, chopping hands off of dope dealers and stuff like that. That. I ain't going no place where they gonna put you in jail for 3 weeks over smoking some weed. Not even smoking it at that point. Like, what are you talking about? Hell, man, please. Russia, off the list. That don't sound, I mean, granted, it never sounded like no fun before. Like, Russia, one of them countries, like, when people be talking about, hey, I want to go visit China. Like, yo, you can do that. I'm not knocking you if you go visit China. I'm just saying, you ever heard anything about China that sounded like fun? Because I have not. Korea, that sounded like they be over there kicking it. Japan, I can kind of see it. Vietnam, I mean, it was a little rough for the soldiers over there, but it sounded like they had some of that good. Like, I see all these places that come up, right? I'd be like, yeah, we might be able to make it happen here. Don't nobody ever be talking about going to China and be like, I had a great time. They're like, oh, it was nice. I saw the Great Wall or something like that. But don't nobody ever sound like they was over there kicking it, living the good life. Uh-uh. And Russia kind of the same way. It felt like they probably only got like 2 months of weather that I'm trying to kick it in. But I'll never be hearing nothing about the nightlife. I'll never hear anything about that. It just sounds like a place where you need to get lit in some form, fashion, or capacity in order to make it through. And now they out here got people in, famous people in jail for 3 weeks. Oh no. Not visiting Russia. Not visiting Russia. I want to make another point, though, while I've got everybody here. I have seen people extrapolate that basically this is tied to the WNBA charter plane stuff. Okay. And so if you haven't seen this, they don't have charter planes in the WNBA. And Joe Tsai, who is the owner of the New York Liberty, also owns the Brooklyn Nets, but he had popped for a charter plane for his team. And they got fined like 500 G's because these capitalists are so amazing when they want to become socialists. And they want to become socialists over stuff like team planes because not everybody can afford them. Which means you might need to sell your team, get your weight up, whatever it is. Like, it's amazing how all of a sudden rich people think that not being able to afford something is a reason why other people shouldn't have it. Wow, isn't that wild? But anyway, I'd seen a lot of they, well, they ain't put no money on charter planes. It shows the lack of dedication to women's sports, so forth and so on, and everything else. Now, what happens with women's basketball players is a lot of them play in Russia because they can make big money in Russia. Like, they can make seven figures. I think it'd be like seven figures tax free. You know, they got a nice little setup. They could go. Like, I remember with Diana Taurasi when I think the Mercury won the championship and they were trying to do something to kick it. And she put in some calls with some Russians. And I think they got a plane or something like to go to Vegas, like, you know, off the Russians because, you know, they play ball over there. They something. And the reason they play in Russia is, again, they make more money doing that over there. But I don't know, like, how much money women's basketball actually makes in Russia. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if the pay that the players are receiving is, shall we say, in line with revenues. In other countries, the money that goes into sports teams, you don't necessarily want to ask where it came from. Did you see the two Escobars? Gabe, did you see that 30 for 30, two Escobars about Colombian soccer and Pablo Escobar?
Yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah, where basically the height of Colombian soccer was the height of, like, drug money being laundered through teams.
Yeah, well, and then also, too, you have like a bunch of different kind of nation states that are funding their team through like semi-phony kind of like advertising things,
yes.
Marketing deals.
Yes.
When they actually chase down the paperwork for it, it's, oh, so you're funding that, actually.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. My point being, the fact that they can pay big money to star basketball players in Russia is not an argument for why the WNBA should pay more. There are other arguments for why the WNBA should pay more. I'm not making that point. I'm just saying, if the WNBA went from having a max salary of like 200 grand to start paying players $1 million to play in the WNBA, Brittany Griner would still be getting on a plane to go play in Russia for another $1 million. You see what I mean? Like, if you got the kind of money to make $1 million and somebody offers you a second $1 million, if you can do it, you're going to get that second $1 million. Now, if you're over here making $15 million and they offer you $2 million, then you're not going to go. But that's never going to happen for the WNBA. Like, they're just not operating at those margins. It's not going to be that. So, yeah, I think the stuff with the charter planes, see, the charter planes thing is interesting because the truth is the WNBA's revenues are not in line with having charter planes. My argument is the WNBA should do the charter plane thing just because that's what the standard of professionalism is in sports at this point. And if we're going to treat these women like they are professional athletes, this is what it means to be a professional athlete in 2022, is that your team flies on charters and stuff like that. What people around the league will tell you, and they have an interesting point here, what has skewed their charter plane situation is that if you play big time or reasonable D1 basketball, there's a booster who got a plane that y'all fly on. And so they grow accustomed to charter flights. But again, that's not in line with revenue. That's in line to having access to somebody that's just willing to give up a plane so y'all can do this. Pro sports don't have boosters. You see what I mean? So I think they should have the planes. I think it's an expense that the league should just simply incur. But this argument is not connected with that argument. Anyway, don't go to Russia. Russia don't care about your mental health or your good time. That's what you tell me when you do stuff like this. If you haven't heard, it's brought to you by the new Love Your Car Guarantee from CarMax. CarMax, here to innovate.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from Science.
Hi, I'm Seth Borenstein, science writer at the Associated Press. A massive United Nations report from top scientists spells out in excruciating detail that global warming is hurting people now with all sorts of extreme wild weather, and it's getting worse. The world is going to be sicker, hungrier, poorer, gloomier, and more dangerous in the next 18 years because of climate change. And after that, watch out. According to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's report, anyone around in the year 2100, your children, your grandchildren, will likely face a world that's going to degrade in 127 different ways. The report helps world leaders figure out what to do about global warming because it's not too late. One Canadian climate scientist called this the House on Fire report. Now, we're regularly hit by wildfires, droughts, hurricanes, heat waves, and flood. If the world doesn't dramatically cut how much carbon it spews into the air, the report says there will be 4 or 5 times the number of these weather disasters. Those disasters, the report says, already chase 20 million people a year from their homes worldwide. And in the future, some places may become uninhabitable. Species are already going extinct. Ice sheets and glaciers are melting. Oceans are rising, becoming more acidic, and losing some oxygen. Gloomy, huh? But scientists say it's not game over for planet Earth or even humanity. In football terms, we're down by 5, there's 90 seconds on the clock, and we're on our own 10-yard line. The odds are stacked against us, but there's still time and hope. Because this report is saying our actions can still make a difference. Scientists say we can't take a knee.
What I think about every time there's some doom and gloom climate change stuff coming up, and I really just wanted to put this in here so you could, you know, can't say I ain't trying to tell you. We should have paid attention to the climate change stuff when the COVID thing happened, right? For all these years and at every turn, people are like, hey, guys, the world is going to catch on fire if we don't stop tripping. And we're like, anyway, we like tripping. And so we just kept on tripping. That should have been our sign that we wouldn't go act right about COVID. Like, hey, man, everything will be good, man. We just got to, like, hold back on some things for a little while. Please, we don't hold back on anything. And there you go. We got the cooties still out here. It ain't running as rampant as it did, but we still got the cooties out here all the time. And then the whole world is catching on fire, all because don't nobody want to pull nothing back off their own end. And the thing about climate change, I do feel like that's a little different, though, is there are very few people who are always right about the climate change stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I suppose an electric car is something that I don't have a car now, but I could have done a while ago, but I like vroom vroom. You know what I mean? I like when the car do that. That wasn't the sacrifice I was willing to make. The problem was nobody was willing to make that sacrifice. We was all in the same space. I will say this, though. Get your money up. You can get one of them i8s from BMW. I don't know if I can afford it necessarily, but that thing was amazing. That's how you protect the environment right there. Get you a damn race car.
All right. This second story comes from business.
Hey, this is Anya Kane. I'm a senior reporter for Insider. After Russia invaded Ukraine, we were curious to see whether or not sales and inquiries about survival bunkers would go up. Whenever there is some sort of major geopolitical event around the world, it seems like there is a renewed interest in these structures. And we wanted to basically reach out to businesses that construct them to get a better sense of what they were seeing. And they all said they saw at least a spike in inquiries around these survival bunkers. So it did seem to bear out the fact that politics tend to send sales and inquiries spiking. And really, these are tied to political issues around the globe and fears about nuclear war and widespread conflict. On the flip side, though, I also wanted to speak with somebody who is a bit more outside the industry and isn't necessarily beholden to these companies. So I spoke with Dr. Chad Huddleston. He is an anthropologist. He has actually studied prepper communities. He's spoken with hundreds of preppers. And these are hardcore preppers. These guys are online. They are talking about what they would do in case of societal collapse and whatnot. And he basically said that these guys really don't do bunkers. They actually scorn bunkers. These are the kind of people who would literally watch shows like Doomsday Preppers and laugh at them because it's totally antithetical to what they do. These guys are all about mobility and practicality and staying light and agile in the case of societal collapse. And that's basically completely runs in the face of what bunkers do. And in the view of these hardcore preppers, bunkers are actually a liability because if you store all your food in a bunker and you have all, you know, your guns and your ammo and your food down there and people catch wind of it, they might try to take your bunker from you. Basically puts a target on your back. And so none of the preppers that Dr. Huddleston spoke with have bunkers themselves. It's too expensive and it's just not practical. So in the event of some sort of nuclear apocalypse, these preppers actually, in some cases, have death bags, which is basically what it sounds like. They prepare a bag with things like whiskey or pills and whatnot and, you know, are prepared to potentially commit suicide in the event of a nuclear apocalypse because they don't want to live in a nuclear wasteland. So kind of a depressing story all around when you consider people sort of buying things out of fear and also hardcore preppers being so pessimistic about a global outcome of a nuclear war. But war is depressing, so it makes sense.
I am amazed that there is enough of a demand for these bunkers that there would be like multiple companies to sell them. Like I just scanned through that report and they said one of these companies said they typically sell between 2 and 6 bunkers per month. And like, I would love to see a whole industry-wide report about how many people actually buy these bunkers. Because Gabe, correct me if I'm wrong, don't you have to get it installed after you've bought it?
Yeah, I saw a picture of them installing it and they're like excavating and all that stuff.
That's what I'm saying. Like a backhoe has to be involved like in order to make this happen. And these guys are right. Somebody gonna find out that you got this bunker. You gonna have a whole line of people trying to get in your bunker, and you better get to your bunker first because these other people gonna be coming for it. Because it's gonna be a whole bunch of silly man building his bunker to a whole lot of. I'm gonna try to get in on that bunker. I ain't gonna lie. If I had me one of them bunkers and like that thing is bulletproof or whatever it is, I got room for some people in this bunker. I imagine it's gonna be a lot of husbands and wives like. Couples trying to come in and be like, yo, can we get in this bunker? And it's going to be your wife in the bunker and the husband trying to figure out what in the world it is that he going to do. She done found a real man, homeboy. You the one that's supposed to be out here trying to figure out how to provide. Next thing you know, you asking me to keep your woman safe. Oh, no, no, no. I'll do it for me. But baby, I ain't going to do it for you. Oh, yeah. Let the kids in here, too. Let them see what a real man like also. Yeah, absolutely right. Or if you refuse to let go of the kids. That's fine. Go find out all the work that woman been putting in to raise them and keep them straight and everything else. Pay it forward, homeboy. Do your job as a real daddy. That's what you need to do. It's going to be, as I say, some cat going to be down there in the bunker. It's going to look like the Playboy Mansion. Get some Marvin Gaye playing in there. Put a record player. Come on in, baby. Yeah. Have a seat. No. I mean, look, the world may be ending, but we just beginning.
All right, this last one comes from Tech. Here it is.
Hi, I'm Will Caldwell, a freelance writer from London who works for publications including The Guardian, The FT, Economist, and beyond. For Wired magazine, I reported on some of the ways AI could be used or is already being used to intervene in our emotional lives. It's called What Happens When an AI Knows How You Feel. The piece looks at a few different examples. There's this app for co-parents that uses language analysis to try and keep warring couples out of the family court system, so it gives you a heads up if your messaging is getting too heated. Then there's this research lab which is trying to develop wearable tech that can jump in if you're about to have an argument with your partner. The same lab is developing tools that can help within a family therapy context too. There's similar work being done to create apps that could provide couples therapy via an iPad or smartphone that gives your relationship a checkup using facial recognition software. Even emails are being written for us using Google Smart Replies, which can skew conversations. So the piece takes a look at some of these developments. On one hand, there's potential to provide therapeutic tools cheaply and accessibly that could help improve our relationships.
Here's the flaw that I recognize in this one, because it raises a good point. Like, they say the AI could recognize that you're about to get into an argument with your partner, and then it winds up jumping in, which sounds helpful. Except, when has it worked out well? When you didn't think you needed to calm down, but somebody told you to do it anyway. Like, you're basically saying the AI is going to be like, whoa, hey, relax. Hey, you're being unreasonable. All these things, how long is it going to take the AI to figure out the way to express these ideas to where the person that's receiving them can find them useful? Because I'm 41 years old and I ain't really figured that out yet myself. Gabe, have you come up with any magic tricks on that one?
I haven't. I was going to ask if it made any difference. The messenger, this is the message, the message is changing, but also the messenger is changing rather than it being like a therapist, family counselor, whatever. It's a screen or a screen with a picture of a head on there being like, calm down.
Yeah. No. I feel like it's just going to be a lot of people screaming at robots. And robots, please stop talking to me like that. Like, that's your best chance. It's just absolutely, like, please don't talk to me like that. That's the best chance you got. That's the only hope that you got. And that only works the first couple of times. The third one, you might as well say, yo, why don't you just shut the fuck up? Might as well take it there, because that's where it's probably going to go anyway. Our voicemail is brought to you by the new Love Your Car Guarantee from CarMax. CarMax, here to innovate.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. The Why I Quit Footballs. For the new listener to the audience, it's a show favorite. How long have you been doing Why I Quit Football, Bo?
Oh, man, I guess about 5-6 years now. Never gets old.
And there are lots of different layers to it that come out in other voicemail topics that we use from time to time, which always makes it interesting. Our first one of the three comes from Abdul in Portland. Here it is.
What's up, Bo? So standing around 6'3", 160, that was scrawny in high school. I played basketball. I never really thought about football. The football coach told me to come try out. He was very persistent throughout the week. I finally gave in. I ran a couple of go routes, blew past the corners, scored a couple of TDs. Nothing to it. A few plays later, I ran a shallow cross through the middle, like the Z receiver. Some DT decided to drop back in coverage. Didn't really notice him, but I would soon. He gave me a mean shoulder to my chest. Felt like the life force left me. I was gasping for air. I was down for a few minutes. He came through with a hand to help me up, and he said, you'll be all right. Shake it off. But I didn't. I told the coach, thanks for the opportunity, but I'm good. I'll stick to the hardwood for now. That dude that gave me that mean shoulder goes by the name of Ndamukong Suh. In high school, he was 6'4", 280. Yeah, that was it for me. All right, bro. Thank you.
Ndamukong Suh told him to shake it off. Shake it off and get back out here. What?
But I didn't.
But I didn't. Yeah, but I didn't. I mean, it sounds like he tried. It just wasn't something he was able to make happen.
6'4", 280. That's a big boy.
Yes. High school.
This next one, the guy didn't leave his name or his location, but I thought it was something that you might relate to, actually. Here it is.
What's up, Bomani? You said, why did I quit football? Well, my junior year of high school, I grew about 5 inches, and I was a good basketball player. I got tall, and most people at the school knew me as a basketball player. So when I played football, my dad was a football player, and that was his sport. And I felt like when I went out there, they targeted me because I was tall. and I was a basketball player. So they would always come from my knees and all these other things. And I find that when you're very tall, I'm 6'7". When you're very tall, I feel like people on the football field usually aren't tall. They're usually not the tallest person. They're usually just big. So I felt like they would just try to take that anger out on me because I was big and tall. So I couldn't do it no more because I felt like, you know, I played defensive end. So it wasn't like I was out there, you know, standing behind the line like most other tall players who get to play quarterback. I ain't had no arm, I'm be honest. But they would attack me. Now, granted, I was a great defensive end. But when I played tight end, was the reason I stopped playing because every time I would catch the ball, I would always end up upside down because they just wanted to go for my knees. So I had to protect the check, if you understand what I'm saying. And, you know, I got to play Division I basketball eventually, but football was out of the question. I could tell football is a short man's game because while one player on the field could be tall, maybe even two, most of them aren't. And most of them trying to take your head off because you're the biggest target on the field.
Yo, I had not thought about this. Football is a game with a bunch of really big dudes who have a little man complex. That is absolutely not the kind of place I want to hang out. Maybe that's just me, but that's not how I want to do it.
You don't see that many super, super tall receivers as much these days,
no.
Do you?
There's no real advantage to you as a football player being over 6'6". No matter what the position is, there's just no real advantage past 6'6". You just a lot for people to hit. And even 6'6 is only at a couple of places.
Think about some really tall tight ends like Gronk. Gronk has a ton of injury problems.
Yep. Nah, man. Like, there's just a lot for people to hit.
All right, this last one comes from Justin. Didn't say where he's from, but here it is.
So I stopped playing football in 11th grade. I finished out the season, but I remember very specifically, I mean, I was like a backup, basically, a defensive lineman. Good enough to start a couple games and everything on varsity, but not that good. But we had a quarterback who was going like College of William and Mary. Not many kids from our school like make it to a big school to go play football. So the local news was out and took had a camera crew out there filming practice. And so they're doing like B-roll and they're shooting stuff at practice. And I got lit up on camera and broke two ribs. Finished out the season, but I was on the ground for like 20 minutes. And the camera crew themselves were laughing at me because I was destroyed. So that was my end of playing football. I didn't even make it close enough to like ever get a camera crew out for me. But the one time they were there to film someone else, I got lit up. And, of course, they used that in their story. So somewhere out there on the local news, there is a video of me getting blown up because they just thought it was funny enough. And the next year, I was like, I'm not coming back. Why embarrass myself? The only thing I'm going to be able to do is get on camera again and get blown up again.
Yo, man, those coaches that you got seem awful. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to toss these cats out of practice for laughing at you under those circumstances. You got two broken ribs. You on the ground for 20 minutes. And these grown-ups think that's funny? They savages. And if the package was about the other guy on the team, what you got to do with any of that? They were just like, you got jacked up. Yikes. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassain handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, remember, Game Theory with Bomani Jones, HBO, March 13th at 11:30 Eastern Time. Check it out. We come on right after Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. Also, by the way, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Seth Bornstein of the AP. Check out his story on the United Nations' latest climate report at apnews.com. Thanks to Anya Kane of Business Insider. Check out her new story about what doomsday preppers are up to with the world seeming to be on fire. And also thanks to Will Coldwell of Wired. Check out his story about artificial intelligence desire to write our emotions for us. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.